Jim Horowitz was the son of two New Yorkers, and after the Second World War, his parents moved the family to South Florida, where they had a successful restaurant business called Junior's.
And they served, at its height, 20,000 people in a day from 7 in the morning. This is not a joke. The restaurant seated 500 people, and there was always a line out the door.
He helped out around the restaurant occasionally as a kid. He also was teaching himself how to play the piano. He begged and begged for his parents to buy him one. And after a while, he was finally successful. His parents tried to put him into lessons.
I played, and then there were piano teachers, but the piano teachers couldn't really handle me because I didn't want to read. I just wanted to play what I heard.
And he did that all through high school and college, where he studied political science and became a paralegal for a civil rights law firm in Washington. He worked there until one day his neighbor came knocking on his door. This woman, Ruby, had heard that Horowitz played the piano.
For whatever reason, you know, she liked me and I was just a neighbor, and she just started knocking on the door and said, "Why don't you come and I want to rehearse. I want to get an act together with jazz and blues." And I was like, "I play Beatles music. I don't really know anything about jazz and blues. Plus, I work for a lawyer." But she was very persistent. I don't know why.
So one night, he went to play some music with Ruby. It was Billie Holiday. She played a record for him, one of Holiday's hits. "Play it again," Jim said. And soon enough, they were playing jazz standards in Ruby's basement.
"Them that's got shall have, them that's not shall lose." So the Bible...
Within weeks, they were gigging in our nation's capital. But after years of performing and teaching opportunities in D.C., he felt like he wasn't growing anymore. He wanted to try something different and get into the business side of things. After a trip to a jazz festival in France, he knew the perfect place to start his own music event, a place where his parents vacationed when he was a child, Aspen. The first step, find a venue.
The original thing was just to go to the Aspen Music Festival and say, "Hey, how about having a jazz festival that's part of the Aspen Music Festival and would start in the Benedict Tent the week before it opens?" That was my whole idea at the outset was really to just be part of the music festival.
After a few meetings, Jazz Aspen Snowmass was born. Ramsey Lewis was one of the first people to play the festival. But after 2 years, it was struggling to make ends meet.
I was discouraged, and people around me were like, "You know what, you should probably just move on. You should probably, you know, find another thing to do with your life, because it doesn't look like this is catching." And no one really here, it wasn't catching on. It was just a little thing, really. It's just a jazz concert over at the tent is all it was. Nobody really thought of it as anything any different.
But then the town of Snowmass Village came calling, asking if he wanted to have some shows there. It was the start of what's now the Jazz Aspen Snowmass Labor Day Experience. First up, B.B. King.
"The thrill is gone. The thrill is gone away."
And in the past few years, he's been able to get the nonprofit back to its roots, focusing on jazz as part of its mission. The JAS Cafe at the Little Nell brings world-renowned jazz musicians to an intimate venue where sometimes even Horowitz takes the stage.
I'm very, very excited about the future of that part of JAS and where it's going to go. And that's very exciting and very personal. You know, I'm gonna keep my finger right on it, and, you know, till I can't.
Until then, he'll continue to bring artists like Stevie Wonder, Ray Charles, Pancho Sanchez, and so many others to the Roaring Fork Valley. Patrick Fort, Aspen Public Radio News.